Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, two alarming headline figures emerged last week. The first was that food inflation in May rose 5.2% from a year earlier. This is the highest it's been in more than a decade. And the second is that Malaysia is expected to spend more than 77 billion ringgit in subsidies and cash aid this year. This is the largest amount in Malaysia's history. Now, what would be the best course of action for the government in dealing with the rising cost of living, but also in managing the strain to federal coffers? Joining us now is Sharil Hamdan. He is Economic Director at the Prime Minister's Office. He is joining us from a warung in Kuala Langat. Sharil, let's begin our conversation tonight by perhaps you helping us to understand the government's thinking in its decision to reversing its decision to remove the ceiling prices and some of the subsidies. Were there political reasons for the change of course? For instance, like the impending elections?
Well, I think it was a problem in communication. It wasn't made clear that what was really the intention was to move the subsidies from chicken producers to the recipients of the Bantuan Keluarga Malaysia assistance, which we would consider B60. That was the main plan. It wasn't actually said that price will be floated entirely. Obviously, if you move the funding or the subsidies away from chicken producers, the ceiling price of 890 wasn't sustainable anymore. And I think what was clarified a couple of days ago is that a new ceiling price will be announced, but the ceiling price will still exist.
Sharil, could you help us walk us through some of the complexities in this issue? Because what we understood with the previous ceiling price, there was squeezing producers and it was making the business of chicken rearing actually untenable considering the rising cost of chicken feed and such. Now, is that problem resolved in the newest iteration of the government's policy on chicken pricing?
I think it's the best resolution we have at this point. As you intimated, the 8 ringgit 90 cents per kilogram ceiling price was not tenable for many places because the cost was already above that or very close to it. And when subsidies were announced for the chicken producers, although 700 odd million were allocated, only less than 200 million was actually disbursed. So you could say this was a problem of bureaucracy, this was a problem of certain chicken producers not wanting to apply for the subsidies because they didn't want people to know their exact production numbers. Whatever the reason, it wasn't working as optimally as possible. So the government decided, I guess, right, we'll fix this, we'll definitely have to fix this structural issue. But for the immediate moment, the best course of action was to transfer that 700 odd million to the pockets of purchases. So it's still subsidies, but you know, in a different form, in a different, more targeted way.
Okay, but what about this huge ballooning subsidy bill, the highest all-time high subsidy bill that we are racking up? What is the plan, Sharil, to offset all of this subsidy spending?
I think that's a longer-term question that will require some hard, bold decisions. But I really don't think... I think the question is more of not can we afford subsidies now, can we afford not to do it? And I think that's the right way to look at it. For the moment, the government is already spending on an annualized spending of 77 billion ringgit, the highest ever, as you mentioned. And we already spend, I think, north of 4% of our GDP on subsidies and assistance, higher than their neighbors, higher than OECD average. We have price controls for a lot of items, and that kind of suppresses our inflation numbers and make our inflation numbers artificially low. So these are all the tools that the government is using to, you know, kind of offset not the subsidy bill, but offset the pain that the vast majority of people are experiencing.
Sharil, as you said earlier, this is also an issue of communications. How does the government of the day sell this idea to a public, already large segments, suffering the pain of rising the cost of living, but also in a time when there's talk of a general election, there's political instability. How do you sell this idea without, in some sense, how do you, as it were, wean the population off the sense that that subsidies are an entitlement, that there is no long-term cost for the kind of architecture of subsidies that we've had for many decades now?
Shira, if I know the answer to that, I think we'll be in a very different place. This is a very difficult question about how exactly we get our country off this kind of structure where subsidies are seen as something that ought to be automatic to the tune of this particular figure that we're speaking of. Look, for me, the biggest question is how do we increase incomes of people? We can't tell people that we're going to slow down subsidies or cut subsidies even next year, even 2 years from now when things become better. We can't do that if our median salaries are still this low. We can't do that when inequality is still this wide. So I guess the government's challenge, whoever wins the next election, is to say, like, to execute a plan where income for the median person gets to increase to a point where they then can genuinely buy into the idea that we need to reduce subsidies. But until and unless,
right,
until and unless the government does that, it's going to be extremely difficult.
Well, okay, so addressing long-term wage suppression is going to take a while to undo some of the structural issues there, Sharil.
Can I just jump in? It's going to take a while, but I think if you make bold decisions, you could do it in 5 to 10 years. So I don't think it's an entire generation.
All right, that's fine. But in the short term of addressing this subsidy bill and what is likely to be increasing commodity prices, what we're budgeting now is with current commodity prices, how long are we going to pretend that we can be immune to any kind of subsidy rationalization? I'm not saying calling for an entire removal of subsidies. I'm just calling for perhaps a relook at the amounts that we're spending on subsidies. Other countries in the region have done that with their electricity tariffs, with their ceiling controls. Can Malaysia continue to pretend that we are immune to perhaps raising any kind of prices?
We can't pretend that we're immune. And I think in particular case of not just the chicken prices, but inflation overall, is proof that we are not able to entirely make ourselves immune from the larger, broader world situation, global situation. But your main point or your main question, Melissa, is how do we get to a point, right, where we can speak of retargeting and reallocating the spending towards people who actually need it? We know from all the data from BNM, from Kazana, that up to 80% of our subsidies are enjoyed by T20. That cannot be right. So this move in terms of subsidizing the B60 with the chicken thing is one step. And I think it will reflect, it does reflect a new thinking of government where, right, if you can't cut subsidies overall, make sure that it's reallocated to the people who actually need it.
Cheryl, you're there in Kuala Lumpur. What do people on the ground think? I mean, there is the resurrection, that popular, war cry against the middleman. We spoke to Jomo Sundaram some weeks ago, and he said that, he was against this idea of talking about the middleman as if this was the problem in contemporary Malaysia. There are many ways that people think about these things. They're bogeymen and they're people to blame, and so on and so forth. What are you hearing from the people on the ground?
Yeah, to begin with, I think there are many factors. I do agree that middleman is not the biggest factor, right? If you stick chicken as the example, 70% of the cost is basically chicken feed, right? And if chicken feed, soy and corn prices go up the roof as they have, then it's not so much a matter of middleman. But whatever little that we can do, every little bit helps, right? As as Tesco says. So we want to make sure that all options are on the table. So I agree, we got to focus our attention on what really, really matters. And in that sense, you know, long-term changes in terms of our own, you know, localized chicken feed production using palm kernel extract, for example, that could be one way to do this, but it's not something that will affect positive change in the coming weeks and months, obviously.
Cheryl, very quickly, can I ask you about targeted subsidies? You know, how can we ensure that targeted subsidies are effective? What, in your mind, do you consider effective targeted subsidies?
In my mind, effective targeted subsidies is when T20 doesn't get any. So really, that's I think that's as simple as it gets. What will make it effective, or how we can get to that? I think our data, not in data integrity, but the quality of our data has to be improved. I think I read somewhere Rafizi mentioned, and I hate to agree with him on this point, but there is some truth to what he's saying. If our definition of who should receive help is purely one household income figure without reflecting the number of people in the household, that's not, you know, high quality data. But that's the best we got right now. You ask people in government, we have data for B40 based on that, you know, questionable, you know, imperfect way of calculating it that we have. It's not entirely clear that we have all the data for M40, right? Because that's not the recipient of BKM or BRIM before this, or BSH before this. So we've got to find a way in the next year or so to really improve the quality of our data, whether we, for example, make it compulsory for everyone to register with LHDN, get that as the basis for our income level across the country, whether central bank digital currency type thing is a way to also allocate to people who actually need it very quickly, immediately, rather than have to collect, you know, bank account numbers, for example. These are all the things that I think, yeah, it takes time, but it doesn't take that long. And you know, as we handle the immediate situation, those are some of the efforts that I hope we can do.
Cheryl Hamdan, Economic Director at the Prime Minister's Office there. And we're going to take a quick break here and consider this. We will be back with more. Stay tuned. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Sharad and I on Consider This. We're discussing what would be the best course of action for the government in helping Malaysians deal with the rising cost of living, but also in managing the strain that subsidy spending is putting on federal coffers. Joining us now is Dr. Juwita Mohamed. She's Director of the Economics and Business Unit, as well as the Acting Director of Research at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, better known as IDEAS. Dr. Juwita, the government announced that the chicken and egg prices would not be allowed to float after all. This was just days after saying that it would be allowed to float. Do you think the government was right in reversing or doing a U-turn on this decision?
Well, the unclear introduction of policies in a nutshell is not helpful during uncertain times. And for now, I feel that clear communication and policy introduction is needed by any government. But looking at the price controls as well as subsidies at IDEAS, we believe that to minimize the negative effects of the price hikes on consumers in the short term, we feel that fiscal policies, including fuel and also electricity consumption subsidies, as well as price ceilings for selected essential goods, have been deployed by the government in the past and currently. But we feel that in the long run, these instruments and interventions need to be rationalized in order to avoid sustained dependence on subsidies as well as price ceilings, which would not be economically viable over the long term. So again, we feel that a formalized social safety net program is instead needed to be developed to ensure that financial assistance and aid can be targeted and can be funneled to the vulnerable households and groups effectively and also transparently. So this comes back to the question that was asked to the previous speaker.
Yeah, Juita, when people talk about this and say, well, this is what we need as it was a prerequisite to unwinding subsidies, it does seem to be a lot to deliver. Is the country in any position to deliver on what you asked for in the near term?
So again, when it comes to Malaysia subsidizing and our expenditure in subsidies, it has been quite high, especially now. So in a nutshell, I feel that we need to find other sources of funding. If we're going down this road in the short to medium term, in the absence of other more permanent social safety nets, we need to find other sources of funding to support the subsidies, again, in the near to medium term. If we are not to depend on petroleum income tax, which we have been for a very long time. So again, I would like to bring up GST, not because I know it's a painful subject for many, but looking at the economic perspective, when we look at how GST was implemented in the past, we saw that the GST collection is or was proven to be able to deliver higher revenues than the current SST collection. And at that time, it has shown that it has evidently reduced Malaysia's dependency on petroleum income tax to a certain extent, which is again subject to the volatility of the prices of the global market. So that's one option. But another option is again to borrow, which the government is not keen on doing. So whatever the option is, a study is needed to be executed to see what are the different impacts are in the medium to long term to households as well as on businesses. And again, we feel at IDEA's prolonged subsidies is not sustainable. And there needs to be a close examination how the phasing out can be done in the long term, given that a comprehensive social safety net is created apart besides the one-off cash transfer programs that we have now.
Right. And I was just about to bring up the one-off cash transfer programs, because again, as Cheryl Hamdan pointed out a bit earlier, the bulk of subsidies is enjoyed by the T20. I think for every 1 ringgit of fuel subsidy, 53 cents goes to the T20 group, 15 cents goes to the B40. How might we think about, for instance, fuel subsidies, a gradual either subsidy rationalization or more targeted subsidies for let's say fuel subsidies, because again, any kind of changes would increase bureaucratic costs, would increase new methods or new processes to put in place. Are we kind of prepared to take that big leap, Juita?
So that's a very difficult question, and I think that this is a good way to think about how we're going to be phasing out certain subsidies, for example. So as you mentioned, Bank Negara also highlighted that the fuel subsidies actually would benefit the upper echelons of society relatively to that of those who are not T20. So again, it goes to show that blanketed form of subsidies do not have the intended positive impacts. You would think about resource allocation more efficiently. So again, you would think logically a more targeted form of subsidies in the short term will be good use of resources in the short to medium term. So there are different ways of doing this, and we can also see how the other countries in the region and our peers have been doing this. The government has talked about this, and I think now more than ever, the subject of subsidy rationalization is at least being talked about and examined more closely. But again, you need to have the proper timing of introduction of certain policies. You need to have certain policies also simultaneously implemented so that the vulnerable households are not the negative blow can be cushioned to a certain extent for these vulnerable households.
Dr. Juita, you mentioned at the start of the conversation that communication, clear communication is key when rolling out any kind of policies, right? Particularly if it involves any subsidy rationalization. Can I ask you if this would be the path that Malaysia is headed on? How then do we best, how then would government best communicate the need to rationalize subsidies to wean the citizens off this addiction of subsidies? What would you recommend as the kind of communication to convince people that this is necessary?
So I feel that the government can embark on an awareness drive. This was done for many different policies or agreements, even for this TPP. They had this awareness drive, not just at the government level, but also, you know, at the grassroots level to get the buy-in. So I feel that, again, this goes along with, you know, the probability of GST being reintroduced in the near future again. So I think with digitalization and all with the social media, I think the government can be close to the people right now, meaning there's not so much barrier when it comes to communication. I think if it makes economic sense to a certain extent, I feel that the people would be open to it, I feel, just as long as other measures as well are also put in place to cushion the blow. So again, this is where I feel that the government can tap into, you know, social media even, and also do awareness drives, not just to those in the urban areas, but also in the rural areas where the buy-in is needed.
Juita, considering general election is looming, how likely is it that the Ismail Sabri administration is going to embark on something so difficult as you suggest? And which political party or configuration of political parties will campaign on such a platform and in the event that they win power, implement it? How likely are these scenarios?
Well, I'm an economist, so I'm going to stick to the economic side. But when this government introduced the subsidy rationalization move just like about a week ago, I thought that was a very bold move. So again, there was this intention to make reforms, to have reforms, to have market reforms. But again, at the end of the day, it's buy-in. So I think maybe a more planned and a more well-planned and well-studied endeavor is needed to show evidence of the impact or the benefits in the long run when subsidy rationalization can take place. So again, I think that would really strengthen the argument, as the introduction is quite sudden, I feel that in the next round, when policies are being introduced, like GST or subsidy rationalization, the government should take time to do an in-depth study. With this, then I think when we present the evidence to the people, when it's more of a an economic rationale, I think it would bode well. If it's not politically motivated at this point, I feel.
Juita, very quickly, in the end, could you help us understand what damage long-term does this architecture of subsidies do to our economy?
So in a nutshell, it's inefficient resources, allocation of resources. So again, how long are we going to be supporting subsidies through depending on a given pool of funding? For example, for now, it's the petroleum income tax revenue. So again, how long are we going to be able to do this, especially when petroleum is not a renewable energy? So what if that fund evaporates? What then? Do we borrow just to keep supporting subsidies? So we can see that it's not going to be sustainable in the long term. But what can be done, I feel, is that when we have a permanent social safety net targeting vulnerable households, then, you know, you can give or you can allocate financial and non-financial aid to those households that will be impacted by rising costs of living, rising costs of food. But on the other hand as well, wages need to increase. And wages need to increase to mirror the inflation rate and to mirror the cost of living and the cost of higher prices for goods and services. So again, things need to change. If it's not how we support subsidies, it's how families are spending, and this goes back to wages at the end of the day.
Dr. Jita, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Dr. Jita Muhammad of the Think Tank Ideas, wrapping up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin, signing off for the evening.
Thank you so much for watching, and good night.
Good night.